someone else to help you. Maybe Black Mesa. That was a joke. Ha ha. That chance. Anyway, this cake is great. It's so delicious and moist. Look at me still talking when there's science to do. When I look up there, it makes me glad I'm not you. I've experiments to run. There is research to be done on the people who are still alive. And believe me, I am still alive.
And welcome to another edition. But first, I gotta let you know that the Pacific Free Clinic is a Stanford-affiliated, student-run clinic that provides free healthcare assessments, low-cost medication, education, and referrals for low-income, uninsured adults in the San Jose area. The Pacific Free Clinic is open to all regardless of immigration status, with services provided in English, Spanish, Vietnamese, Cantonese, and Mandarin Chinese. The Pacific Free Clinic is located at Overfelt High School in San Jose. And for more information, visit pacific.stanford.edu or call them at 888-321-9972. That's 888-321-9972 for the Pacific Free Clinic. Also, the Stanford Archive of Recorded Sound wants you to know that it's a wonderful resource for those interested in classical and music, classical music and jazz. The Archive of Recorded Sound contains thousands of historical recordings and numerous collections of printed materials. It's also located in the Braun Music Center on the Stanford campus. You can visit the Archive of Recorded Sound on the web by entering the term Stanford Archive of Recorded Sound in any search engine such as Google or Yahoo. Take a tour. There's a great deal of joy. And welcome to another edition of the Lunch Special on KZSU Stanford.
just prisoners here of our own device. And in the master's chambers, they're gathered for the feast. They stab it with their stealing eyes, but they just can't kill the beast. Last thing I remember,
and welcome to another edition of the Lunch Special here on KZSU. It's Monday. It's a little afternoon, and it is the Lunch Special. For an hour, we have another professor in every Monday, and today we are honored to present the professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering and the director of Atmosphere and Energy Program here at Stanford, Mark Z. Jacobson. Mark, welcome back to KZSU.
Thank you, Bird.
And I say that welcome back because I just found out, just before we turned on the mics, that you did a one-day show here when you were a student back in, what, 94,
95?
84. 85. Gosh, I'm going. Yeah, you were teaching. You've been teaching here since 94, 95. First of all, what was that show about?
Well, we did a one-day trivia-thon across Stanford. I was a student at Stanford, and our dorm, which was the American Studies House at the time, in the corner of campus in Mayfield, mm-hmm. We had a project to have a trivia contest, and so I was doling out the questions on air.
And it wasn't like you guys were all part of KZSU, but you called the radio station and said this would be the best way to get to as many students as possible. How was the turnout?
Well,
the response.
The response was great. We had a little hiccup at the beginning. I was asking questions, or I started the show and I started asking questions, and then I was told by the producer that we weren't on the air, so I started repeating my questions. But it turned out we were on the air, and it was pretty embarrassing. But after that, things went pretty smoothly.
Did you guys get a recording of that show?
There might be. I don't have it anymore if we do, but it may be somewhere in the archives.
Yeah, we'll probably have to look in our archives. You brought some great music today, and is there a theme to the music you brought?
Well, I think each song represents something in my past or just I enjoyed the song. Hotel California, like, because I dabbled in playing guitar. I was never very good, and I'm still not very good, but it was one of my favorite songs of playing guitar.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very cool. Lest we talk too much, although there is quite a bit to talk about, but we'll save that for the bottom of the hour, your work here at Stanford and really actually throughout the world, including testimony before the U.S. Congress. Let's get back to some music. What's up next?
Well, next we have Lynyrd Skynyrd and Freebird.
Very cool.
Yeah.
a little Freebird for your Monday afternoon. Everybody remembers that song. The guest today, professor of civil and environmental engineering. In case you just tuned in, this is the lunch special. And also, he's the director of the Atmosphere and Energy Program here at Stanford, one of the main authorities on the planet of global climate change and global warming. Originally from Los Altos, went to Gun High, Mark Z. Jacobson. Mark, that was pretty heavy stuff. So we were talking off air, and you said the reason you liked that song was it used to play guitar to it.
Well, that one too, less so than the Eagles song, but that one too. I really
the Hotel California, that's right.
Yeah.
And did you ever get a chance to see Lynyrd Skynyrd?
No, not live. No, I wish.
I hear you. I hear you. Do you? Is music a big part of your life?
Yeah, I love to listen to music, and yeah, I like to, especially these types of songs that we're playing today. And as you'll see, it's a lot of these songs are from the 70s. I think some of those are the most classic. Maybe every generation thinks whatever they grew up with is are the best songs, but these are some of my favorites.
Do you hear any modern music that you like?
There are some songs. My daughter kind of forces me to listen to some other songs that are not... I can't say I would listen to voluntarily, but I've grown accustomed to some of them.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Cool. Well, what do we have next for the folks?
Well, next up, we have Journey and Lights.
All right. Let's check it out on the lunch special on KZSU Stanford. Okay, now it's time, folks, to find out who our guest is. Kind of a This Is Your Life. There's so much, but I don't want to take up too much time, but there is so much. If you want to know more about our guest, you can just Google Mark Z. Jacobson. And when you put the Z in for his middle name, that'll be the kicker that'll pull it up. But Mark, you were born in Stanford Hospital. You went to Gunn High. You grew up in Los Altos. You came to Stanford and graduated in 88 with a B.S. in Civil Engineering, a B.A. in Economics, an M.S. in Environmental Engineering. That's heavy in itself. Then you went down to University of Southern California.
UCLA.
UCLA, and you got a Ph.D. in Atmospheric Science. This is heavy stuff. Now, how did you get this love of all this environmental study?
Well, I think when I was a teenager in particular...
Speak up just a little bit.
Yeah, when I was a teenager in particular, I played tennis a lot, and I would travel around to, especially in Los Angeles, in Southern California, where the pollution was really, really bad. And I felt this was a significant problem, and I was kind of became interested in trying to solve it and make it a reduce the effects. And so when I was a freshman at Stanford, I had to kind of decide what career path to take, and this kind of stuck out to me as something that I really wanted to solve, one problem I really wanted to address and tackle, because it was something that affected a lot of people, and that there wasn't, there was a lot that was being done about it, but not enough, because the problem persisted. And I was simultaneously also interested in climate change as well, even though it wasn't a very popular issue. I was interested in it, but for my research, when I eventually went on to graduate school, I had to focus on one thing, and I ended up going to UCLA for a PhD because it was a place where the air pollution was bad, and I could actually be in a kind of laboratory to try to solve this problem. And once I started working on air pollution, and kind of, I developed a computer model to simulate the air pollution, I then expanded that eventually to look at global climate change. So I developed a global climate computer model as well. And ever since then, I've been using both to study these issues.
And your studies have resulted in not just the government, but, the EPA and also other entities using your information as a guide how to go through into the future, right?
Yeah, we've had some important results that seem to have been of interest to a lot of people. One includes a finding that black carbon, the main component of soot, which is emitted by diesel vehicles, jet fuel, and biofuel burning, is probably or most likely the second leading cause of global warming after carbon dioxide.
Diesel.
Well, the soot that comes from diesel and mm-hmm. other types of incomplete combustion.
And is this why they're trying to clean diesel up now? I noticed I've heard some reports where there's a big fight going on because the truckers don't want it because it costs them money, but they're trying to upgrade diesel engines.
Well, diesel soot also has health effects, and a large part of the regulations to date on the health effect on diesel particulate matter is based on the health effects. But it turns out that the climate effects have started to become important, and people are starting to regulate it. In fact, I was happy that in 2004, the state of California actually, as a result of their regulations of the particulate matter, it was not possible to actually buy a diesel passenger vehicle between 2004 and 2009 in California. And this was partly due to our work on the climate effects that they accounted for. And today, there are more regulations that have, several regulations have been proposed in Congress and actually internationally as well to try to control diesel particulate matter. And several of these are based on the climate as well as the health grounds.
Mark Z. Jacobson, professor here at Stanford, PhD advisor. Some of the courses you've taught, and I think it might still be teaching, weather and storms. Air pollution from urban smog to global change, air pollution modeling, and numerical weather prediction. Are you still teaching some of those classes?
Yes, all four of them. I'm still teaching.
Okay. Funny, we mentioned diesel. I heard somewhere that when Mr. Diesel invented the diesel engine, it was in it was made to run on oil, vegetable oil. And then I heard a story that the car companies bought up the patent and reconfigured the engine to run on petroleum products. Is that what happened?
Yes, it's pretty far back in history, but that sounds like it.
So if the diesel, and now when people want biodiesel fuel, is that original fuel that Mr. Diesel had in mind, and does that pollute the air at all, biodiesel?
Yeah, biodiesel, it's very similar to diesel. It's just made of usually vegetable oil or animal fat. That's, you add an alcohol to it, and you produce this, what's called biodiesel. But biodiesel, in large part, it produces a similar amount of carbon dioxide indirectly from the exhaust. It produces less particulate matter, but more oxides of nitrogen, which are different pollutants. People argue that because you grow the biodiesel, that it should reduce the net carbon dioxide to the air, because when you grow it, you take out carbon dioxide to grow the vegetable, the crop. However, it turns out that processing the biodiesel to actually grow it and then to refine it and to distribute it, it takes a lot of energy as well and a lot of emissions. So the net carbon emissions are really similar to those from regular diesel. So there's really not much benefit of biodiesel.
Eat your heart out, Willie Nelson. We love Willie, too, because we're not opposed to anything that anybody has said. You've testified before the U.S. Congress, the U.S. House Committee on Black Carbon and Global Warming, the U.S. House Committee on Air Pollution and Health Impacts of Carbon Dioxide. You've also testified before the EPA to reconsider a denied waiver to allow California's control of carbon dioxide. Also in front of the EPA on proposed endangerment finding and something called TED. You did a debate at TED on renewable versus nuclear power. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So that was last year. There's a conference called TED, which is Technology Education Development, which is a pretty popular conference that they have lots of different speakers on different topics. And my topic was a debate with Stuart Brand, who's
from the Whole Earth Catalog?
From the Whole Earth Catalog.
Wait, yeah. You mean he was in favor of nuclear power?
Yes, he was in favor of nuclear power.
Didn't that guy used to be an environmentalist?
Yeah, he was.
What happened? Somebody pay him off?
I don't know how his conversion worked out, and you know, he's a really nice guy, and he's that we had this debate, and my position was for renewable energy and without nuclear power, including wind and solar and geothermal, hydroelectric, tidal, and wave power, for example. And yeah, we had a debate that in front of about 1700 people plus a large audience outside of that, and they did a vote beforehand and a vote afterwards. And even though more people were in favor of nuclear power at the beginning, and even at the end, there was a shift 10% away from nuclear power. But I feel gratified, well, not really gratified, unfortunately, we had the disaster in Japan recently where the nuclear power plant meltdown occurred, in the Fukushima Daiichi plants. This kind of solidified a lot of the people's position against nuclear power now, because a lot of the points that were made came to realization. Namely, there is a danger, there is a risk of nuclear power, and the risk is not only just due to the meltdown. A larger risk is actually due to nuclear weapons proliferation, due to the fact that having nuclear power plants in many countries, which you might need if you had a large-scale change of energy infrastructure, it gives countries the opportunity to secretly develop and refine uranium for nuclear weapons use. And that's been done in at least five countries so far.
What five?
Well, India and Pakistan, Iran, North Korea, and then also Israel to some extent.
You had a recent op-ed article in the New York Daily News. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So in the New York Daily News, I did an op-ed discussing the issue of nuclear and comparing it again to renewable energy sources. And the key points are that while nuclear energy is certainly cleaner than coal or natural gas, it's not so clean as wind energy or solar energy. For example, on a carbon basis, nuclear power puts out about 9 to 25 times more carbon dioxide per unit energy generated than wind power, due mostly to the refining of uranium, mining and refining of uranium, and also the fact that while you're waiting around the long time it takes to put up a nuclear power plant, then you're burning coal and natural gas from the background electric power grid, whereas it's much shorter lead time for a wind turbine or a wind farm. But not only are the emissions greater from carbon and also air pollution due to nuclear power, but the dangers that I was just mentioning are greater, including the nuclear core meltdown possibilities and also the weapons proliferation. And for these major reasons, the point is we don't really need nuclear energy because we have enough clean renewable energy sources, and there's no reason to take the risk. Why would you spend money on something that's less efficient and is riskier when you have something that's more efficient and less risky when there's no need? There's plenty of wind resources around the world to power the entire world for all purposes. There's 5 to 10 times more wind energy, in fact, than you need to power the world for all purposes. And there's even about 20 times more solar energy than you need for all purposes. And there's also lots of geothermal and hydroelectric and tidal wave power. So the point is, when you have these other resources, and most of them are very cost-effective at this point, and the rest will become cost-effective in the next 10 to 15 years, then there's no reason to use nuclear power, which in itself is extremely expensive.
That's Mark Z. Jacobson. He's a professor here at Stanford and also director of the... I want to get this right. I don't want to get it wrong. There's so much you got so much information sitting in front of me. You're the director of the Atmosphere and Energy Program here at Stanford, along with professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering. And I would venture to say you're probably one of the most foremost authorities on the global environment in general. You've written two textbooks. One you updated. The first one was called Atmospheric Modeling. And the next, and then you updated that one, and then the next one was called Atmospheric Pollution, and now you're going to update that one, and you're going to call it Pollution and Global Warming?
Yeah, Air Pollution and Global Warming.
Mm-hmm. And these are textbooks.
Yeah, these are textbooks, not necessarily for the kind of general reader, but mostly for courses, but the air pollution book in particular is pretty accessible to the general reader.
Very good. And people can just Google your name and get all this information, right?
Yeah, sure.
Mark Z. Jacobson. Well, let's do this. Let's get back to some more music because you brought so much. What do we have up next for the folks?
Next is Simon and Garfunkel and Scarborough Fair.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine. A deep forest green, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, and snow crested brown, without no sleep or night, and echoes the child of a mountain. She'll be a true love of mine. Sprinkling of
is a gun.
And she'll be a true love of mine. Tell her to weep it in a sickle of blazing in scarlet battalion.
Parsley's angels, rosemary.
Simon and Garfunkel from a long time ago. We're here with Professor Mark Z. Jacobson. From what I've learned today, I think you're probably the foremost authority on global climate change. That's what I think. You are the director of the Atmosphere and Energy Program here at Stanford. Can you speak about that a little bit? Because that apparently seems to be some of the cutting edge study that's going on in the world right now on this kind of stuff.
Yes, thanks. So the Atmosphere Energy Program is a degree program in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Stanford, and it has students who are doing undergraduate degrees, bachelor's degrees, and master's degrees and PhD degrees, and their students are really enthusiastic. They're interested in this program in both atmospheric science, like air pollution and climate in particular, and energy science and engineering, namely renewable energy solutions to these air pollution and climate problems. So we select students for the program who have a passion for not only studying climate and air pollution and their renewable energy solutions, but also then can take their information when they graduate and try to make a difference in the world. And so far, we started this program in 2004, and it grew steadily. Starting with just three students the first year, and now we have over 90 students at all three levels, undergraduate, master's, and PhD. And many of our students have graduated, especially undergraduates and master's degree students, and they are making a difference, and this is something that makes me proud, and it's great to be able to see students who are so interested and who can make a difference, because they will inherit the world, and so we have to make sure that they're well educated.
You're turning out a bunch of little U's.
Well, I don't like to think of it like that.
Can you speak a little bit about you said so you're some of your students are going out, and your graduate students are going out in the world and making changes. Talk about a few that stick out in your mind.
Well, a lot of them go on to work, especially after a master's degree, and some will work in government, for example, at the Department of Energy, or work at a national lab, or at an environmental protection agency, and others work in companies or industry, for example, a lot of energy consulting companies, and public utilities as well, and they're lots of, and startups as well, and like renewable energy and like solar and wind energy companies. So it's there have been we've just seen a proliferation, or a lot of students have gone out there, and we see them more and more, and that really has made me feel good about the program. And in particular, I could think of one example of a kind of interesting case where Chevron Energy Solutions, for example, they have that's a small part of Chevron that's dedicated to kind of renewable energy. And we've had several of our students who graduated have actually gone into that part of the company. In fact, I think at one point we might have even had a majority, so they actually took over that part of the company from the inside. I
don't know. Wow.
And I'm just kind of joking. I don't think it was quite a majority, but it was pretty close.
Wow, that's great. That must really make you feel good. And that's what it's going to take, right, for this next generation to, for lack of a better word, infiltrate the government and corporate America to change that mindset, right?
Well, I think of it as, you know, we want to have students who are experts in energy and atmospheric science. It's not enough, I think, to just know the energy portion of it. They have to know the impact of energy systems on the atmosphere, because otherwise you can easily make the wrong decisions. For example, you know, if you're just pushing one particular energy source, that sounds good, and I'll give biofuels as an example. People thought they were, you know, the panacea or cure-all. But it turns out they have severe impacts on the atmosphere and also on land and water supplies as well. Unless you've studied this, you would have no idea. And so our goal is to have students who are not only knowledgeable about the energy systems, but also about the impacts of the energy systems. And that's why we combine these programs, atmospheric science and energy science, to produce people who are knowledgeable about the whole system.
Mark Z. Jacobson, director of the Atmosphere and Energy Program here at Stanford. If you want to learn more about that, Google his name, Mark Z. Jacobson, or you can Google Atmosphere and Energy Program at Stanford. Let's get back to some music now, Mark. And what do we have up next?
Next, we have Kansas and Dust in the Wind.
Thank you. looking for adventure in whatever comes our way. Yeah, I gotta go make it happen. Take the world in a loving place. Fire all of the guns and bombs and explode into space. I like smoking lightning. Heavy metal thunder. Racing with the wind.
And if you don't know what that song was, that was an Easy Rider. That was Steppenwolf and Born to Be Wild. And in a certain kind of a way, our guest this hour, I think, was born that way, because this guy's bucking all the norms. And Mark Z. Jacobson, I've been greatly moved by your visit with us today. This has been really eye opening for me.
Thank you, Bird.
Thank you. Thanks for so much for coming down to spend some time with us. We want to get you back on the air as soon as we can, too, please, because this is kind of, it was great music, but this information you put out is, I think, stuff that everybody needs to hear.
Yeah, well, I think one of the difficulties, because most of my work is doing the science, and you know, part of the goal is to make people aware of the scientific results, but disseminating science is not very easy. Because most people, you know, don't want to listen to the details, and so you have to put things pretty simply. But also, there are not too many venues, and I don't. My job is not to go around advocating, but just to provide scientific information that other people use. But unfortunately, sometimes it's either not used or misused, and it's hard to spend a lot of time, you know, spreading the word and also making and correcting, you know, errors. So. You know, opportunities like this just to let people know that there is information out there on, and there is a hopeful future. I think that's very important. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you very much. Mark Z. Jacobson. Google that name, and you'll get all his work here at Stanford and beyond. And what's the last song we're going to go out with, Mark?
Last one is one that pumps me up quite a bit, and it's called Kashmir by Led Zeppelin.
All right.
Thank you. Sun.